Hi guys, it's Tony Sayers here again with another podcast in the Transcending Time series, and got a very special guest today. What I want to try and do with these podcasts is give a platform to all kinds of people that have got something to say, and this guy certainly does. I've been following his work for a little while now, his vlogs. It's Danny Brooks, and you there, Danny?
Yeah, I'm here, yeah.
Yeah, nice to have you on, mate.
It's a privilege to be here, it honestly is, and it's fantastic to have the opportunity to talk to a lot of people out there that obviously may or may not understand how easy it is to do what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, I first saw one of your vlogs, and you were, like, we were just speaking off air, you were, like, holed up in this, like, cubby hole out on your land, and it really gave the whole what you were saying a real sense of authenticity, and you know, you were really speaking from the heart, but also it was nice because you were kind of you're walking the walk as well. You've clearly been on a journey that's really seen you take it right to the very extreme, whereby you're now sort of out on your own on the land. And well, I don't know if you're out on your own, but do you want to just tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, what sort of led you to where you are today, and what you're doing at the moment?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I'm Danny, and I live in the south of England. I've lived here all my life, and I grew up here on sort of like in a farming community, if you like. My family have always been farmers. They've always sort of looked after themselves. So from a young age, I've always had this knowledge of how to grow vegetables and how to keep animals. And it's just something that stuck with me for a while. As I'm older, I've been wanting to explore more into what you can do, because there are a lot of things out there that it's free. If you're willing to self-educate, or you know, pick up a book, or even look online, there's so many different ways you can do things that we take for granted, because it's easier to pay some money to get it for, you know, provided for us. If you just try a little bit harder, you can get stuff for free without the exchanging of money. And I looked into it a while back, and I was sat out in the forest, because I've got quite a close group of friends that I've been friends with, say, you know, about 10 years or so, and we meet up regularly, and we do these getting back to nature days, where we just go for walks in the woods, you know, because when you get older, you lose contact with your friends, if you know what I mean. Work takes precedence, you get married, you get kids, it all goes haywire, and I find it so important to keep those relationships strong. So meeting up with my friends in the woods, we were just sort of sat around, and I just said to myself, I said, why can't we just do this all the time? Why are we always running from pillar to post on the commands of other people? And, you know, rightfully so, the answer came up, money. We need money. And I went home that night, and I just couldn't get it out of my head. We need money. What do we need money for? What, we can't eat it. It doesn't, you know, unless you burn it to keep you warm, it has no real use. Trees give you fruit. You know, the ground can give you vegetables. The chickens can give you eggs, examples. And money gives you nothing. So I sat there and I thought, could I live without this? And I looked at my television and I said, yeah, I could live without it. So I got rid of the television, and I just started getting rid of everything I didn't need, and then looked at ways to replace the things I did need with free alternatives. And in doing that, I moved into a caravan. So I moved out of a house and moved into a caravan. I started traveling around the south of UK, just visiting different campsites, because in England you can have 28 days in a campsite before you have to move. So I used to stay 28 days in one place, and that's when it really started. I started doing videos back then on the caravan days. Okay. And one thing led to another, and a plot of land came up for sale near the caravan site I was currently staying on, so we snapped it up, and I've since then, that was about 2.5 years ago, and I've just put everything I can into finding out all I need from books, on the internet, etc., to get the knowledge to basically provide everything I need for myself without money, and thus needing to work, not needing to be a part of the system, and just living for me, if you like, or living for my family.
Yeah, I think you hit on two really important points there that I picked up on. Firstly, the first one is we've given our power away to others to do basic things for us, haven't we? Like
absolutely, absolutely.
Growing your own food should really be something that we should all be able to do. Now, I'm guilty. I'm
it
not.
Should,
That's okay. I'm not there.
I'm a firm believer of it should be taught in schools.
Yeah.
That's how early we should learn it. We should learn to grow our own food from when we can walk.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the last thing they want, isn't it? They don't want people growing up being self-sufficient, because that completely, as you know, loses all their control. So I think that's the first point that I think is really important to get over, is that we've given our power away. They provide, or quote unquote provide, things for us, which is normally laced with some kind of poison, and
yeah, absolutely,
package it all up for us, and we pay them for the privilege, when, you know, you're just sort of taking it right back to basics. You've sat there, come up with a very logical, common sense answer as to say, well, actually, I don't need them to do that for me. I can do it myself. So straight away, what you've done is given yourself a huge chunk of freedom back. And
yes. That's the way I like to think it.
Yeah, just in that one foul swoop. So that's really great. And I think it's such a very basic, simple concept, isn't it? You know, the fact that we pay for food. You know, nobody ever questions that, do they?
Well, this is it. I mean, I think, to be honest with you, it's very, very clever the way they've done it, because, I mean, they've made people lazy, and by making people lazy, they've given people this illusion that they can't be bothered to do these things. So they go for the easy alternative, which the people that made you lazy then provide you. So it's on one or two things. You either too lazy to do it, or you just go for the easy answer, which they coincide, they coexist. Your laziness and the easy alternative, you know, it just keeps us in this stagnant place. We're not, if you can think that we are made of water, essentially, and like water, we need to flow. We need to keep flowing. And thus flowing, we learn, and we can, you know, we can progress and evolve within ourselves. Putting a barrier in the way and saying no, you have to stay in this stagnant place, just allows us to sit here and get lazier, and the lazier we get, the easier we are to be controlled. When for the simple action of putting down your phone, just going in the garden and planting some potatoes, half an hour job, but you know, it's easier to take the 5 minute trip to the shop and spend the money on those potatoes that are already picked. I mean, that's just sort of the society that they're breeding.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that I often talk about is that we are in a period of, you say, flowing or evolving. And one of the huge things that we're here to learn is self-responsibility and moving away from being governed. And that, just by doing that, it's a huge sign of rebellion in and of itself, isn't it? So.
I mean, that's the thing. That is why America, if you look in America, they won't, in some states, they won't allow you to collect rainwater. They won't allow you to keep chickens or to grow your own vegetables. And I think that is morally wrong. Mm. That is morally wrong. That is saying you have no choice. Can someone really put a rule in place to stop you growing your own food? If you then starve to death, is that an act of murder on their behalf? I mean, there's so many questions that don't have answers. And the easiest way to do it is just to say, well, the whole system is wrong. Yeah. From every angle you look at it, it's vindictive, but it's very clever.
It is.
It's where we are, just allows them to get, to take your power. When in reality, we all have the power within us to do exactly what they're doing, just for ourselves and not for any alternative motives.
Yeah, absolutely. I often think, actually, I spent a couple of years living in London, and I would drive around and I thought, God, you know what it's like if there's a petrol crisis. Imagine if there was a food crisis, what people would do, and you know, the extent of the chaos. So I think, you know, without wanting to scaremonger people, that is another huge reason that people should really, I guess, look to do what you're doing, or even on a smaller scale. I mean, no, not everyone can just up and leave and move on a piece of land, but there's things that we can do, isn't there?
Absolutely. Sorry, excuse me.
It's okay.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, if you take the Native Americans, they used to think 8 generations ahead. So they didn't just think of their own children and their grandchildren. They, you know, really did think of, we need this to be suitable for 8 more generations, with the, you know, with the assumption that their children will think 8 generations ahead and their children will think 8 generations ahead. And because we're not, we just think, you know, everything's okay and everything's all fine. The future for the children is going to be a dark, dismal place. We can't have these shops forever. We can't have this mass production forever. It's you putting all our eggs in one basket. To grow your own food, and a lot of people, like you said, you know, they can't just go out. I know so many people that they're not physically able, their circumstances are different, and they can't just get up, leave everything behind, and go live in the forest. But what you can do is, I mean, if you have a garden, just make a small patch of that to grow vegetables. And if you live in a flat, trust me, you can still grow things in boxes. Just get a washing up tub from the Poundland, fill it full of compost, and you can grow herbs, you can grow potatoes in your living room. It's not brain surgery. In gardening and growing our food, we've done for thousands and thousands of years. We've just forgotten the knowledge. Once you pick up a book and start reading it, it starts coming to you and you start seeing it. And this is, I mean, I'm very guilty of being a lazy person, and I will sit there and say, I just can't be bothered to do this. But the more I get into the flow of nature and growing my own food, providing for myself, the more I want to do it. The more I want to see what else I can cut out of buying and self-providing. I want to be able to say, right, that's one more thing I'm not paying for. And then I just keep moving on like that. It's baby steps. It is baby steps, definitely.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and sure. By doing that, you're also shining a light for others to do the same. So...
Absolutely. And I think that is the best, that's the best thing you can do. If you know something, share it, because then 2 people know it, and then 3, then more and more people start to know this knowledge, and it doesn't become then hoarded knowledge like we live in at the moment. We live in this world where knowledge is suppressed and education is pre-written, and it's all textbook. What we need is to be able to go out and find the sources that give us the knowledge that we need for us. How to grow the food, how to make solar panels, how to provide electricity, etc., etc.
Yeah, and obviously you said you had a background in farming, so you already knew a lot of the information there, but you've just been sort of complementing that with just searching online and reading books, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the best thing you can do for yourself is go to the library. I don't spend so much time anymore in the library, but I do. I used to spend a lot of time in the library because books can be costly. They can be costly. I got 2 great books the other day, and it was only 2, and it cost me nearly £50, which is a lot of money. And I do find that the more you look into self-sufficiency, the more expensive it can come, because what they do is they can't stop you being self-sufficient, but they can definitely sort of halt you and slow you down by putting stupid prices on things. And if you go to the library, the books are free. Joining the library, it's free. They'll have so many different books that you can use, from, you know, growing your own little garden patches to keeping chickens. And I've kept chickens for years. For years and years I've kept chickens, and they are so easy to keep. And for the sake of, you know, the free eggs, it's worth it. You say already, if you get 2 chickens, you're already saving yourself on buying eggs. And that's the little steps you need to take. That you just need to be willing to take that step.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that I picked up on what you said was about just getting rid of stuff you don't need. I know in my own life, that's also given me a lot of freedom, because the things that we own tend to end up owning us, don't they? So
yes, by absolutely.
Decluttering is certainly, clearing those things that you don't really need. Again, you're just giving yourself another slice of freedom. So I would encourage anyone out there just to have a look at everything you've got and just think, do you actually really need it? That's what I did. I just sat in my room and I said, I don't need that, I don't need that, I don't need that. and sold most of it. So,
Yeah, see, that's the beautiful thing is you can just sell it, and that money you make can be then put into your first baby step, you know? I have recently made my own plans where I've still got the bedroom at my mum's house. It's still there, you know. All my sisters are the same. They have their bedroom still there. It's still our family home. And like I've said, at the moment I'm hibernating because it's winter in the UK at the moment, and my land isn't quite there yet. But it, like I've said, it's baby steps. And I've moved into the caravan. I've even refused to go back into the house because I've been living in the caravan for so long. And I've now had plans where I've thought, there's no reason why I can't turn my old bedroom into a growing room. I can grow or I've got an orange tree in there at the moment. I'm growing a lemon tree. And these are things that aren't readily available in our climate. But by taking the advantage of the empty space, these little things you can do. If you go to somewhere like Inaccess or a garden nursery, I don't know, you know, obviously what you have in different countries and whatnot, but we have many, many garden centres and garden nurseries in the UK. And if you just go there, you can pick up an orange tree. My orange tree, I think, was £18, and it's growing nicely in my bedroom. It's just in there on its own. It's warm enough, and I water it regularly. A lot of people are under the impression that you need loads of space to do this, but if you just start with baby steps, your mind will take over and start utilizing space, and then you'll think to yourself, "Well, if I get rid of my hi-fi system, I can put another tub of, you know, stuff there. And if I can get, do I really need my television? No, let's get rid of that. Do I really need this?" And then you start getting rid of that, this, that, and the other, or you find alternatives. I've got rid of all my furniture and I've replaced, like, I don't need these big armchairs. Let's downsize. Let's make up furniture from pallets. Let's make tables. Let's reuse what is already available instead of contributing to this consumer society.
I bet it really gets your creative juices flowing as well, right?
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah,
Because once you start, you can't stop. I mean, I've already said I'm very lazy. I mean, it's a shameful thing to admit, but I am a lazy person. It takes me a while to, you know, get the enthusiasm, especially in this time of year where it's cold, to go, right, let's get outside. And I can understand where people come from, where they really do feel it's a harder job than it is. And I will sit, and I still do the same. I'll go, oh, it's such a hard job. I need it. For example, today, I was down the land today and I was planting a hazel tree and sorting other things out. And I was sat here thinking to myself, I just can't be bothered. I really can't be bothered. And I got down there and the tree was planted within 10 minutes. And then I did other things. And then before I knew it was time to come back, you know, to be back here by one. And it just goes so quickly that once you take that step and stand up and say, I'm not going to sit down today. I'm not going to watch the telly today. I'm not going to do this today. I'm going to actually, you know, cut the grass. I'm going to plant some tomatoes or whatever it is. You will then find your body takes over, and before you know it, you've cut the grass, you've trimmed the hedge, you've got tomatoes planted, you've got a potato thing in, you know, you've started a compost pile. All these things will then contribute to your next little step. Like I said, with growing inside, I mean, if you've got a spare bedroom or spare space, there's no reason why you can't grow tomatoes all year round. I know you plant them in the spring, for example, because it's warming up and that's the right time to plant them. But if you do it right and you know how to do it and you can get this knowledge from books, there's no reason why you can't plant tomatoes in flower pots just like you do any other flower that you've got on the windowsill. Herbs as well, basil, oregano, thyme, rosemary, all these things can be grown on windowsills.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a key solution for sure. So, as well as the food aspect, what's the situation with water and that kind of thing down on your land? Have you got are you looking to collect rainwater or distill it or what?
Definitely. No, well, a little bit of both. We are setting up a system at the moment for. I mean, a lot of people in this modern world, they're under the impression that the tap water or bottled water is the only water that you can drink or are allowed to drink. And I strongly disagree. I think with a good filter system and knowledge of water purification, there is no reason whatsoever you cannot collect water that falls freely from the sky and consume it, drink it, cook with it, and use it just like you would water from the tap. The only difference, obviously, being is it's free. And it's cleaner. And a lot of people were under the illusion that because it's, you know, it's not been treated, it hasn't gone to a treatment center, it can't be good to drink. This, of course, is a huge common misconception. For thousands of years, we've drunk from rivers, we've drunk from wells, we've collected rainwater, and it's only recently in this, you know, futuristic modern world that we've had indoor plumbing. A lot of places in the world still do not have indoor plumbing and still rely on things like the rain and rivers and wells. My own preference is basically rainwater. Anything that can have a gutter will have a gutter on it, which will collect rainwater, which will go through a filter system that we've designed. It hasn't been tested fully yet, but we've designed a filter system which is near enough free that can be made from reclaimed materials. And we want to filter the water, and then we'll purify it ourselves through distilling or boiling. Just cut out the whole need for this whole plumbing and indoor tap thing completely. I have jested on the idea of, in time, maybe trying to dig a well for a more, you know, a more renewable source of water.
Yeah, excellent. Again, it's just when you just sit and think about it, it's so crazy. I'm just sitting here thinking now that, hang on, nature provides the water falls from the sky, and we go out and we pay £1.50 for someone to bottle that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the soil grows,
people don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing. If you ask anybody, really, where does water come from, they'll either say the tap or the sky. And then you ask them why they pay for one and not the other, and they say, well, because we can drink one. And you just think, well, if you were lost in the wilderness, and you were lost out there, and you were thirsty, and, I mean, you can live 3 days tops, I think, without water. And especially after those 3 days, I don't think you're going to mind if you're drinking from a river, a puddle, or anything like that. Because our body will naturally take over, and you'll see a liquid, and you'll say, I need to drink that. There's no reason why we can't drink rainwater, it's just we've been told not to.
Yeah. It's definitely the next stage in our evolution, what you're doing. It's just getting people to start thinking that. And like you say, it's not so scary. And getting people to just start reading about it and just starting small, like you say, the baby steps and growing things on their own windowsills, and certainly something that I need to do myself to start looking into, for sure.
Of course, there are so many different levels to it. It's got to a point now where everybody gets to this point, and I've spoken to a lot of people that said, oh, I thought that a few years ago, but I have children, or I thought that, but, you know, I'm not physically able. You know, they get to these points where they then question it and say, I want to go and live off-grid and be self-sufficient. I wouldn't mind living in the woods. I wouldn't mind living in a nice community. And then a lot of people say, well, I'm too old now, or I've got a family now, I've got this, I've got that. And they sort of make excuses for their own behaviour. And I think if you're going to always... one of my greatest philosophies, if you like, that I picked up along the way is you will never solve a problem if you constantly complain about the solution. And even if the solution sounds hard, or if the solution sounds like it's impossible, if you're always complaining about it and not trying to solve the problem will always remain the same. If you're one guy and you think, you know, I don't want to live in this society anymore, I don't want to be a part of this system, and you're only one person, there is absolutely no reason why you can't go to a camping shop, buy a tent, buy a gas stove, buy a few essentials and survival kits, make yourself a pack, and just go. Put your backpack on, walk into the woods one day, and then just don't come back. There's no reason why you can't do that. It's your own boundaries and your own... it's your denial, in reality. It's your denial that will stop you doing that, and you'll say, oh, I can't do that. I can't, you know, that's so unlike me, or it won't work, or there's so many problems, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. And you start making excuses of why you can't live a free life. And I think that is part of their brainwashing technique to get you, you know, not trusting yourself.
Yeah, well, yeah. They've made us rely on them so much. It's for some people,
of course,
it's such a mental leap to get to that stage. But yeah, I mean, just talking about it and getting it out there and like people like yourself living by example, it's going to grow exponentially. And I know in the UK that's it's growing a lot. There's more and more people going off grid. I was looking to do it myself last year before I come out overseas, but what I did find out when I was looking into it all, just how difficult the authorities are making it for people to do it.
One of the things
that I was really stunned by, and it's probably old news to you, is the fact that you cannot live legally on your own land. And
I have suffered this. I have been a victim of this. Last year, in fact, there was we had a big issue with it. The councils and the courts all got involved over it, and it was because they didn't want me living a self-sufficient lifestyle.
Yeah. So how did you get round that?
Is it still ongoing? It's ongoing to a point where it's never going to go away.
Yeah.
They know I'm there. They know, you know, what I'm doing, if you like. And they're making my life hard. Or they did. They seem to have disappeared now. It was last year I thought to myself when I purchased the land, I said, I've got a caravan, I've got land. I would be an idiot not to put the two together and have my home on my land. And you know, that would have been problem solved, happy days. I put the caravan on the land, and within days, the council in the area... Well, it wasn't so much the council, it was a division of the council, like another department called the National Park Authority.
Mm-hmm.
And the National Park Authority are basically, what they've done is the government have sat down with a big map of the UK, put huge rings around all the wooded areas or heavily wooded areas, and said these now have to be under control of the National Park Authority. And to the naked eye, everybody thinks this is great. Everybody goes, oh, that's good. You know, it's being looked after by these National Park Authorities. And it isn't just the New Forest that's suffered this fate. It's also things, you know, places like Dartmoor, the Peak District, the Lake District, all over the country. If you just type in national parks in Google in the UK, it will show you where they all are. And they've said these are now in control of the national park. What the national park are doing is they are then chopping the woodland into sections and then selling them off to the highest bidder. And this is what this is one thing I touch in my vlog recently, where I'm phoning councils and asking them how the you know, green belt areas, natural conservation areas, these sort of places are becoming development sites, and nobody can answer the question. And the National Park Authority came to me and said, you know, you can't put your caravan on your land, it has to go. But what happened after that was, although I was in the wrong to their standards or their rules, I still complied, and they still took action against me.
Right.
So we're now in the processes of basically, they know that they've broken the law themselves.
Yeah.
My legal team and my solicitor have both said that when or if it goes to court, we're going to take them to the cleaners. I haven't pushed for it because I'm not that type of person. I'm not the type of person to start creating waves. I'm not money orientated, and the thought of the compensation or suing them for what they did, it's too much hassle when I could just move on from it, learn from it, and just carry on my own little way. So to get around it, I've complied with their rules to a certain respect. So I haven't had the caravan on the land. Instead, I've built my own sort of yurt. And to build the yurt, I've kept it within their planning permission restrictions. So it's no bigger than a small shed. And the materials I've made have basically made sure that the yurt is removable. So it's not a permanent structure. Of course, for me, it's created a lot of difficulties because I could have just put the caravan there and I would have been finished. But instead, I've overcome the obstacle. And what we've now done and what we've now created is something that last year I could never even have imagined. Like I said, the baby steps catch up and eventually you'll start seeing the progress.
Yeah.
And when you look back at where you go, wow, this is amazing. Look how far we've come. And since that incident with the caravan and the whole... Because they did come to my land and they took everything and they destroyed our first attempts at our self-sufficient lifestyle. And they took everything and threw it to landfill. And when we asked for it back, they said they couldn't give it back. It's in a landfill. So a lot of people were very, very annoyed with this, and we basically we made our presence known. It's not me. I mean, I've had a following on Facebook for over a year now, where a lot of people have dedicated their time to help me. They come down and they help me on the land, or they'll send me sort of almost like donations.
Sure.
Just buy trees or to buy flowers to, you know, they'll say, can, you know, oh, here's a tenner, go buy a couple of hanging baskets. So we'll go out and we'll buy the hanging baskets and put them on the land. And a lot of people do help. So when this happened, the uproar, they got the council even asked me, could I please ask people to stop with the letters, the phone calls and the emails.
Brilliant.
Because they were feeling harassed by it. So, and I expect these people in the office, you know, they're feeling harassed. So I said to people, just let's stop now. They've got the point.
Yeah.
And we haven't heard anything from the, although I do constantly wonder to myself, is it worth me just saying, look, I want my stuff back. Is there any chance I could get the money for it? Because they do owe me, you know, some sort of compensation, or, you know, just for the things they took that can't be replaced.
Yeah.
Things that did cost money back then that I no longer have now.
Right. So it just shows you as well just how, when we get together in numbers, how we can stop certain things or make a point, make a stand. But it's always down to the numbers. This is the problem that we face, as you well know, on a mass scale. It's trying to get more people to be active and to speak their truth. And when we come together like that, we can do stuff like that, and we can put a halt to their tyranny in some cases.
Absolutely. And don't forget as well as yourself feeling this flow of creativity and imagination, others that join you will as well. I mean, constantly people come to my land with a sort of warped view of what it is. People think it's dirty. People think that, you know, you're just living in ditches or under bushes. I've had skeptics come to my land and go, wow, I did not expect this. I mean, and I've gone, this is it. It's not what you think it is. And then their brains start going. They start sending me messages saying, oh my God, you know, you could build this, you could do that. And so far, so good. You know, we've got plans for plumbing, electricity, hot water, you know, even to the point where we're going to have a hot shower and a bath. It's just having that creativity and going with the flow.
And when you're
I don't think it's crazy. It's not crazy. Not doing it is crazy, if you know what I mean.
Well, exactly, yeah. And it's just, yeah, when you're talking about existing in the current paradigm compared to, say, what you're doing or changing it, it's more of a risk not to do anything, like you say. But no, that's good. And so, just changing subjects at the moment, where do you see the whole of these so-called awakening at the moment? I don't really like using that word, but where do you see things as they are at the moment with people? What about people in your immediate circles? Are they starting to question things, or are you finding that people are just still stuck in the matrix mindset?
No, I do find that a lot of people, and some of these people are my closest friends, and I do value their friendship a lot, and I hope I don't obviously insult them by saying this. It's no offence intended, but a lot of people, sadly, are still not questioning enough. I mean, I have a lot of people that are close to me, and they have been for years, and they'll still say to me, "Oh, you're on about it again. Oh, you know, you need to stop with this conspiracy thing. You need to stop with all this. You know, questioning everything. Maybe it is just, you know, as it is. There is no questions." And I just think to myself, "Come on, really? Come on." Because they don't see the self-sufficiency thing as a conspiracy theory. They just see it as it's me being me.
You're just a hippie.
That's just Danny. It's what. And everybody comes over for a barbecue, and I start, you know, talking to myself, saying, "Well, there's a good 20 of us here. If we wanted to, we could just live here. What are they really doing? Oh, come on, no, we're not going through this again." And I'm just like, "Well, you're all paying for what? No, we're not talking about this again." And I just think to myself, "Well, you don't talk about it enough. I'm not seeing the bigger picture here." I firmly do, and I will stand by this. I do believe that in the next 10 years. we won't have any water left. We're not going to have, you know, the chance to have clean water anymore because they just won't be in. Same with, you know, clean organic food. Even the air quality, that's compromised. In the last 100 years, the air quality has dropped significantly. And there's more plastic in the ocean than there is on land. I mean, it's got to the point now where if people aren't willing to do something, then they are just a part of the problem.
Exactly.
They're contributing to all these issues that we all face. We're all in the same boat. We really are. And if I run out of oxygen or clean water, so does everybody else. But because everybody's in the mindset of, well, I can go to Tesco's, I can go to Walmart, I can go to, you know, all these other convenience stores and superstores, I can drink my water by the bottle. And you just think, well, no, they're not going to be trading forever. Because the people that run those shops, they'll need the water as well. And if they haven't got water, they're not going to be there to sell you the water. It's a whole amongst of, you know, it's a big nest of problems. And the biggest problem is people who are naive enough to say, no, it's always been this way, and this way is the best way.
Mm. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Yeah, so they'll probably all be end up down at your land, Danny, when the water runs out.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, where do we go when we run out of food? When you go to the supermarket and there's nothing on the shelves, where would you go? Where would anybody go? They just go home, go back to their house where there is no food. A lot of people that don't know what prepping is, where you you know, you prep for natural disaster or world government drop, you know, when the world goes to shit, basically, when shit hits the fan and there's no more government or there's no one to provide for you, where do you go for food? Do you wander around looking aimlessly for a new leader or a new master, or do you roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty and do it yourself? Because if that's the case, why wait for the world to go to shit? Why not start now? Why not roll up your sleeves and just start providing for yourself now? So even if it does or does not end, or, you know, the apocalypse or whatever, even if that doesn't happen, because a lot of people will say, oh, you know, that will never happen. Well, even if it doesn't, at least you're living a free, self-sufficient lifestyle, which you will be healthier for, you'll be happier. Nobody wants to go to work 9 till 5. I mean, I certainly don't. And living self-sufficient, you, instead of going to work, can spend time with the family, can have you time, can do everything that you want to get done.
Yeah. Well, the crazy thing is that people that like it the way it is, they would find that concept so crazy. You'd be probably called a dosser or a hippie or something like that. It's almost like we glorify work so much, don't we? It's like such a great thing to work so hard. We glorify being busy, you know. Oh, I'm busy, like, it's such a great thing. And
absolutely. But I mean, that is a very good point. I mean, everybody wants to be busy, but I think one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard was from Shawshank Redemption, the film. And Red says to Andy Dupre, he says, you can either get busy living or you can get busy dying. Mm. And I think the longer we stay in this society, you are just contributing to your own extinction. Working, you know, nobody wants to set an alarm for 7 o'clock in the morning. And those that do, they question it every evening when they set that alarm, but they never do anything about it. They're too busy living until they die. Mm. And while they're busy dying, the world is passing by, you know, without them. I speak to so many people that won't get up early to watch a sunset, watch the sunrise, but will get up early to go to work. And I think we're missing out on all these, you know, natural, beautiful things that are gifted to us every single day for a man-made system, which is just designed to make a rich man richer and to keep the poor man poorer.
Yeah, we've traded it all in, like you say, and people are, they're existing rather than living. There's a big difference between the two, isn't there? And that's what people are doing. And I think that the aim of life should be to work as least as possible, actually. That's the way I think.
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, where is the time in this robotic society for our creativeness? For where are the musicians, the poets, the storytellers, the great things that humanity has the potential to be? It's all been completely battered out of us in this dredge of a system, like you say, which sees us getting
the education. The education system is just there to warp the minds of children and to take their creativity and imagination. And without this creativity and imagination, like you say, where will be the artists and the musicians? Where will be, you know, the painters, the, you know, those that think outside the box? They'll be working 9 till 5 in, you know, jobs that, that make them miserable. And without that, the world will become just a bleak, grey mess. There'll be no colour, there'll be no music. It will just be the same old, just the way it's always been.
Yeah, well, I've just come back from Japan, actually, and that place is completely robotic. I got the train, the morning train, commuter train in Tokyo one day, and I was literally squashed right into the back of the carriage, and just with the people in suits, and they just look exhausted, absolutely exhausted. And you just wonder, and then at night, I got the train at night, say 11 o'clock, that you could see them still in their offices, still working. And it's like, God, wow, just, you know, that is life for some people until they hit 70 years old.
If they hit 70 years old. I talk to a lot of people around here. I talk to a lot of people that, you know, I come into contact with, and I say to them, you know, so I don't want to be rude, but how old are you? And, you know, people will say to me, oh, I'm, you know, 57, 58, and they're still working. You know, they're working in, I'm there, you know, I'm a new employee, and I get talking to people that have been there for 30 odd years, and they're now 57, 58, and I'm thinking, why are you still here? Why are you still here? I mean, I certainly do not see myself working past 30. And I will give any advice to anybody that does take living off-grid seriously, and you do have the means and the physical capability to do so. Don't just run in and wing it. Although I will say, every opportunity, wing it as much as you can, because tomorrow isn't promised, and, you know, you don't want to live a life of regret. Just wing it. When it comes to a self-sufficient lifestyle, the best thing that I found is plan it in a simple way for you to understand. I gave myself a 5-year plan, and I'm 2.5 years through that, and everything I've wanted to accomplish has been accomplished. You don't have to make it vigorous. You don't need to make it a chore. You just need to write on a calendar, on this day, I got to plant this. On that day, or by that day, I want to do this. I want to do this. And it could be little things from, I want to plant, you know, I want to plant a potato plant on this day, and then 3 days later, this day I want to cut the grass on this day, and you just start making a plan of exactly what you've got to do. I've been doing this for 2.5 years now, and everything seems to have gone well, touching wood, fingers crossed. And in the next 2.5 years, if I keep crossing things off that list, off that plan, by the age of 30, I will be retired and I will be 100% self-sufficient, which then leaves me the next 30 years, 40 years of my life, or however long I'm, you know, blessed with the existence here. By that time, I've forgotten what it is to be a part of a system. I've forgotten what it's like to work and collect paychecks and hoard money. I've forgotten all of that. But I know on this day, I have to plant tomatoes. And on that day, I have to, you know, collect the honey. And on this day, I need to shear the sheep. You know, you just replace the normal routine with a brand new routine. Do it slowly. Just do it slowly and take pictures. The best thing to do is to take loads of pictures so you can remind yourself on those days, because I have those days where I go, what's the point? What is the point? It would be so much easier just to live like everybody else in the system. It's easier. Yeah. And I'll go on, you know, I'll go through these pictures and I'll go, no. Stop right there. In the last 6 months, look what you've achieved. Come on, you can do it. And, you know, you sometimes you have to give yourself a kick in the ass. And sometimes, you know, friends and family will come up to you and say, no, come on, you're doing a great job. Because it does get downhearted. You know, if you've tried something and it doesn't work, or you think it works and then you find a problem with it down the road, or, for example, for me, the first mistake I made was I didn't test the soil. So a lot of plants that we planted died because the soil I have is very acidic, and that was a big downer on things. And I was like, oh, you know, I can't do this. I don't know anything about bloody soil.
Can I just interject there?
Yes.
Was the soil acidic because of just the environment that we live in at the moment, or is it just that kind of soil anyway?
It's well, the soil, basically where the land is on a, it's like on a big gravel deposit. And what's happened is the trees have, mainly pine trees, have grown on this gravel hill. And over, I don't, I'd say, over 500 years or so, mulch from the trees has created a very pine needle dirt. It's not soil that you would get in the garden. It is basically composted pine needles, pine trees. So the acidic quality comes from those pine trees. And I didn't know this to begin with. But once I found that out, I was amazed at how many of the plants I wanted to use could grow in acidic soil. You just have to get the right types. If you can imagine trees like plants like family members, they've all got different blood types. So you can have one lavender plant that likes normal soil, but then you can have another lavender plant that likes acidic soil. So you just have to go to your garden nursery and just say, have you got any plants that grow in this type of soil? And I found that I've managed to get around that in two ways. Firstly, the one I've just mentioned, where I just buy acidic plants, and where I need to grow other things like vegetables and things, we're just creating a soil transfusion, which is basically getting horse manure and topsoil and just putting it on top of the acidic soil that's already there and just sort of blending it in to make it a more neutral soil for when we come to plant plants that want non-acidic soil. And that's just knowledge that we've picked up along the way, just sat there going, how can we get through, how can we get over this hurdle? Why don't we just put good dirt on top of the old dirt and mix it in and create our own blend of dirt?
So it's trial and error as you go along then,
Oh yeah,
basically.
definitely, definitely, always trial and error, especially when you're doing things off grid. Because a lot of the time, you'll see people on YouTube or in books, and they'll say, "Oh, go to your local hardware store and buy this and buy that, and you'll need this." Sometimes, if you look at the items they're using, you can say to yourself, "Well, no, I don't need to go to a hardware store and buy that because I could use this as an alternative." And it's then where you're coming away from the instructions and the original plan, and then it's your idea. So you then have to make it work because their plan that they're showing you needed, for example, a black bin, like a big black dustbin. But you haven't got a big black dustbin. You've got a see-through black dustbin. And the easy solution is you just paint the one you've got black. But you have to, where you want to reuse things, because I'm a big believer in recycling and reusing. When you start doing that, I have found a lot of problems have arose because I've, come away from the original plan, but that doesn't mean it doesn't work. You just need to be willing to do the trial and error and get it to work for you. And once you do that, you get such a great sense of accomplishment
Yeah,
that
sure.
you no longer feel that you no longer feel like a burden to yourself because you've done it. And it's like a little pat on the back for you. And every little achievement you have will be like that. It will always be like a little pat on the back, which will get you through the times it fails, and you'll think about giving up a week. But a week, you'll love the fact that you've managed to do this and you've done that, and the pros definitely outweigh the cons.
Yeah, and you're growing in confidence every time something works, I guess. So you get more
Definitely. Absolutely. And when one thing works, it just, like I said, when one thing works or you take another little baby step, the imagination and the creativity, it just starts flowing. And you'll find yourself going to the local tip to see if you can reuse it. I go to the tip three or four times a week. I always post up the stuff I get on the tip on Instagram. So I've got Instagram where, I'm always posting stuff. I get compost bins, I get guttering, I get wheelbarrows. I mean, I got loads of stuff from the tip. From skips as well, or from just going around and saying, oh, that's been in someone's garden, obviously not using it, just knock on the door and say, if you don't want it, I can get it out of get it out of your way. And 9 out of 10 I find people are going, yes, please, please take it, just get rid of it, it's been there for years, and they just don't use it. But you can, don't be afraid to make treasure out of rubbish, honestly, because it is very sort of valuable to have that knowledge to be able to reuse other people's stuff instead of just consuming all the time. Let's just buy another one. Let's just keep contributing to the system. Not when there is stuff that can be reused. You just need to look.
Yeah, and it looks so much better, I would imagine, having something authentic that's been reused and turned into something and alchemized into another purpose rather than just going down to home base and buying something, another plastic pot or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do find that if you have a lot of removal guys in your area that, you know, they drive around and they empty people's houses or clear out garages, a lot of these people are looking to get rid of this stuff. They want it to go. They don't want it. They've been paid to pick it up, but now they have to pay to dump it, or they have to pay someone to get rid of it. Do get their numbers, find out, you know, these people, phone them up and just say, what have you got? 9 out of 10 of the time, you will find that in the back of their van or their truck, they will have wood, they will have, you know, garden furniture, trellises, these things that you can literally, it's like going to a, you know, like a pick your own garden thing. You know, like, I'll have that, I'll have that, I'll have that, I'll have that. And most of them will deliver because they just want to get rid of it. And I find a lot of these people don't just get rubbish. Some of them, great crates they pick up, you know, great wooden boxes, useful things that a lot of people would just throw away. But when you live off grid, you can find a use for it because everything's free. Every little resource has a value.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it sounds definitely inspiring. That actually here in Cambodia, where I am at the moment, there's a big off-grid movement. People looking to live off-grid over here. So I think it's growing. The people are the idea is growing in people's minds, and there's people making stuff out of plastic. We've got a terrible rubbish problem here. People, the locals, throwing plastic everywhere. So there's people that are picking up all the plastic bottles and making structures out of the plastic bottles and.
Well, I've seen this. Yeah, I've seen people. You know, you can make greenhouses from plastic bottles if you just, you know, research on how to do it. Again, completely free, and you'll have a greenhouse. And it's one of those little things that people will either see a bottle or they'll see potential.
Yeah, it's just having that bit of imagination and expanding the mind and not seeing things as rubbish, you know. We've been so
Definitely.
conditioned to just chuck things that we don't need. We don't see that it could have another value. But it's interesting, it was you that quoted that there was more. I was telling someone else about the fact that there's more rubbish now in the sea than in on the land.
Well, it's plastic, yeah, plastic rubbish, because obviously plastic takes millions of years to decompose. So it's just floating around in the ocean. It's just sort of like floating there, sinking in the, you know. And we can't just, you know, get a litter pick patrol to dredge the bottom of the ocean, which is really sad, because all you need is a plastic bottle to fill up with water, and it sinks to the bottom. And once it's there, it stays there. And that's, you know, a lot of people, they just, because you can't see it, it's out of sight, out of mind.
Exactly.
Which I just don't think is the case.
Yeah, no, definitely recycling is another solution. But we're coming towards the end now, Danny. It's been so good talking to you about all this.
It's been great. Yeah, it's been great.
Your passion really comes across. It actually made me just want to go out and buy a pair of wellies and start digging up the garden here. So,
I couldn't recommend it enough. Honestly, I could not recommend it enough.
but have you got any message you want to put out to the people that may be thinking, or they live in flats, and or just anything that you want that might empower people to maybe look at a more sustainable way of living on a finishing note?
Don't be put off by people that aren't at that level, at the same level as you. A lot of people will tell you you're crazy. A lot of people will say that you're nuts. A lot of people will try and put you off. See past that because they don't understand what you're thinking or what you're going through. Just keep encouraging yourself and encourage your skeptic friends and family to get involved as much as possible. Because I think the biggest problem is a lot of people, they'll think these ideas and they'll start to do it, and then a lot of friends or family, unwillingly and unknowingly will mock you and jest you. And some people, you know, they'll take that to heart and it will put them off and deter them from it. Don't. Keep going, keep pushing, and you'll get there. You will definitely get there eventually. And I mean, there's so many people online that can give you advice. I mean, for example, I mean, if you want, I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram. By all means, you can find me on there. And
do you want to
you know,
just give your what are you, is it just Danny Brooks, is it on Instagram or and Facebook?
On Instagram, it is. Oh, let me remember. On Instagram, I am under Danny Brooks, but I think you can also find me under the Self-Sufficiency Project 2016. But it should come up with Danny Brooks. If not, I will. I'll see about sending you a link or something so you can.
Yeah,
I don't
if
know,
you send me the link and I can put it in the details when
yeah,
you put the interview out.
And on Facebook at the moment, my name is Raoul Halvar. But
do you want to
I
explain
told...
this? Because this is quite funny.
I saw a post on Facebook that said if you wanted to change your name, you would have to verify it. And I'm very, very experimental, me. I won't just take someone's word for it. I like to see if it is true. You know the facts for yourself. So I was like, well, that can't be true. You shouldn't be expected to verify who you are. So I changed my name, and it didn't ask me to verify it, but now it won't let me change it back for 60 days. But it is Raoul Halvar, which is spelled Raoul Halvar. But I have been told that if you type Danny Brooks in, you will still find me. It will just come up with Raoul Halvar instead. But yeah, you can find me on Facebook, find me on Instagram, and if you have any questions, just send me a message and I can pretty much answer anything that's within my knowledge. And if not, I'm pretty sure I can find somebody that can point you in the right direction.
Great. It's been so good having a show which is really aimed at solutions. So it's been really great talking to you, Danny, and
thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on, and keep up with your vlogs, man. I love watching you. You know, you're very to the point. You have a good sense of humor in there as well, and I think humor and satire in some of these subjects that we talk about is so important. And I think for anyone who's not listened to any of Danny's vlogs, keep an eye out for them, because they're really, you know, they're hard hitting but with a touch of humor as well. So keep on with that, mate.
Yeah.
And
you can find it as well on my page. They'll be all over my Facebook as well.
Yeah, definitely, mate. But have a great day, and I'll let you get back out on your land if that's where you're going.
No, I will be going back out. Yeah, I will be going back out in the next, you know, in the next 10, 15 minutes and stuff when I've got stuff sorted. Yeah, it's still a nice day out there at the moment. We've still got a few hours of daylight left.
Oh, excellent. Okay, mate. Well, you take care.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.